If at first you don't succeed, try again. Life moved quite quickly with Roxy. We were very comfortable together. She was great fun and we shared some good times. We enjoyed being in each other's space and spent almost all our time together. Neither she nor I enjoyed packing overnight bags. We were far too lazy to do this every other night. Probably a more accurate reason was that I much preferred being in my own house. So guess what logical conclusion I came up with? Let's live together. I guess there are two types of men, those who avoid this kind of commitment and go to great lengths to protect their space, and those who are too selfish or lazy to worry about it. No prizes for guessing which camp I fall into. Brett was a full-time student in his third and final year of his degree. It seemed like a great opportunity to let him learn to live on his own, with some responsibilities, and for the first time in his life, on a budget. Besides, Roxy had a really crazy cat called Shotzi, which would not have survived with my two young huskies, Phoenix and Dante. So Brett moved into Roxy's apartment to look after Shotzi, and she moved in with me. It was probably about 4 months later, in August 2006, when I next had contact with Debbie. I can't recall what triggered it, possibly something to do with Debbie's car, which was registered and financed in my name, even though she was paying the monthly installments. During this contact, she told me she had started seeing a psychiatrist who'd asked if she'd go for some brain scans. The psychiatrist had asked her whether she'd ever suffered a severe head trauma, which Debbie had, from a very severe motor accident many years before. She'd been a rebellious teenager at the time and was the only passenger in an accident in which the driver, a boy, was killed. Debbie was badly injured and had to undergo skin grafts, having suffered severe head trauma injuries. The psychiatrist was very surprised that the previous psychiatrists and psychologists that Debbie had seen had never inquired about this. Debbie then underwent a series of brain scans and other related tests. I kept in touch with her via email as I was concerned and interested to see what the results were. The diagnosis was that she had frontal lobe epilepsy caused from the accident. I can't recall accurately whether she had a lack of electrical impulses or too many, but the net effect was that she would react to a situation immediately without any thought. The example the psychiatrist gave was like a dog that snapped on impulse if you tried to take its bone away. This is exactly how Debbie would snap and react at times. The good news was that this form of epilepsy can be treated and cured in time with the correct medication. I was really pleased to hear this news, as it made sense and, more importantly, it was treatable. It was a physical condition as a result of an accident and not a psychological disorder. I suddenly felt that perhaps I had been right in my belief that it was my duty, my responsibility, to help Debbie. Why was it only now that I was in a space that allowed me to learn the true cause of her behavior? We had to meet, and we did. It was only a few months before when Debbie had driven down my front gate, resulting in a series of events that ultimately led to her night in jail. Yet when we met, all seemed forgotten, on her side as well as mine. Is love blind, or do we choose to erase all the bad memories when we want to? I was confused. I'd always had a special love for her. I'd tried extremely hard to help her, but without success. There were so many questions racing through my mind. Was it because I had given up too easily? Should I try again? With medication, proper psychological treatment, and my support, it might be different. I believed I had to try again. With hindsight, I'm not sure whether the reason was to help Debbie or to help me. Was it to prove to myself that I had not failed her? Was it perhaps to prove whether I had abandoned my task, my responsibility, and had therefore failed myself? The previous time I had felt this calling when I was with Gloria, I had prayed to God for guidance and had received divine intervention. For some reason, I don't recall asking for guidance this time round. I'm not sure why. I made the choice, but there was a minor complication. Roxy was living with me. Strangely enough, just a couple of weeks prior to receiving the news of Debbie's condition, Roxy and I were experiencing several problems and challenges in our relationship, probably because we had moved in together so quickly and didn't really know each other. To complicate matters further, I was going through a very difficult period as I'd just written the chapter about my father's death. Up until this time, I hadn't realized that I'd never actually dealt with my grief and sadness. I guess at the time, I'd never had the opportunity, besides the brief communication I had shared with him in spirit in the bathroom. Writing about it forced me to open up and deal with it. It was an extremely emotional time. Every word I typed was followed by streams of tears. Most of the time, I couldn't see through the tears as the computer screen was a blur, but the words kept on coming, albeit slowly. My way of dealing with issues is to withdraw into my shell. I become quieter and more aloof. This was difficult for Roxy to accept, and on a number of fronts and issues she was pushing and probing. The more she did, the more I asked her to back off and give me space. I can understand her point of view in wanting to deal with such issues, but there is a time and place for everything. Unfortunately, this was neither the time nor the place. I was dealing with an accumulation of many years of issues, incidents, my lack of sharing and expressing my love for my father when it was too late, and he was gone. It may have been selfish on my part, but I really needed space to deal with my sadness. But Roxy didn't understand. She wanted to deal with issues that affected her, which I guess she had every right to expect. The result was simply she pushed me too far one evening after I'd asked her several times to drop a minor issue she'd raised. I believe I'd done my best to make her understand this was not the time. I finally lost it and literally shouted at her to back off. I guess she was on the receiving end of not only my frustration caused by her relentless pursuit in trying to resolve something, but also my pent-up emotion. Later, while we were lying in bed, I apologized for having shouted at her. She quietly asked me if I loved her. It was a moment of truth that surprised me. I tried to answer in a diplomatic yet honest way, but she saw straight through it. She decided then and there that she was moving out the next day and made it my responsibility to move all of her items back to her apartment. Brett was very unimpressed with me upon hearing the news that he was going to be spending more quality time with his dad. "What did you do to screw this up, Dad?" were his words. Quite honestly, at the time, I wasn't sure what the answer was. I was now able to focus on trying to fulfill my responsibility of helping Debbie. We agreed that she would not move in and that we would take it one step at a time. We would slowly try and build a relationship without disrupting her kids. She started taking the medication and she had regular sessions with her psychiatrist. It was amazing to see the difference in her. She hardly drank, as alcohol was not allowed with her medication. Things looked positive. It looked like it would work out. But I knew we still had a long road to travel before we could begin to claim some success. What I was not aware of at the time were the side effects from the medication. When she realized the side effects, she decided to reduce her dosage. And at some stage, she decided to stop taking the medication altogether. She was convinced that she was okay, as things had been going well for her and for us. She was a much happier person. She was less stressed, and she was handling her kids much better and sharing her love with them more than ever before. In her mind, she was better and did not need the medication. It wasn't long before I noticed the change in her, in our relationship. It didn't make sense until she told me one day that she'd not been taking her medication for some time. I was angry. I told her that she had to continue with it, but she said that I didn't understand the side effects, so it was easy for me to say. I asked her to speak to her psychiatrist and get alternative medication, which she said she would. Sometime later, the same process would repeat itself again. Each time we slipped backwards. Debbie was just not prepared to accept some side effects as a trade-off to getting better and healing the physical aspect of her condition. Eventually, in late August 2007, after another year of trying, we finally ended it. This time, in a less acrimonious manner. I finally realized that I was not able to help her, not because I didn't want to, not because I hadn't tried, not because I had failed, simply because she did not want to help herself. She refused to put in the effort or accept that you have to invest to get returns. This was proved by her subsequent actions and choices in the months after we broke up. She decided to quit her job as she hated the environment and her boss, which is understandable. However, she did not have another job to go to. She needed the money but was not well qualified or experienced, and it was late in the year. Unless she was very lucky, she would battle to find another job. Sadly, this was what happened, and the next thing I heard was that she was stripping again. Back in this line of work, she took drugs again, drank excessively, and led a totally separate life from her kids. She was living with her mother again. At the age of 31, she had gone back to the life she'd led when she was 22. It's all about choices we make, lessons not learned, and consequences that get worse every time. The good news is that she only did this for a few months until her mother managed to get her a job working for a friend of hers. Debbie met someone and got married in September 2008, before she moved to New Zealand with her husband and her youngest son, Callum. She had to give up custody of Trevor, who now lives in Durban with his father and stepmother.